Hello, Dr. Sam Dubé here once again. It is January 3rd, 2022, and we're fortunate to have with us today here on The Fifth Doctor, emergency physician Dr. Daniel Nagase and physician Dr. Mel Bruchette, or Bruchette, as we say in French. And Dr. Bruchette, thank you so much for joining us today. Now, as I understand it, you were in the hospital yesterday. You are speaking to us today. You're not in the hospital. And what I would like to do is I would like to hear from you about what actually happened. That is, you were forcibly admitted to hospital on December the 8th, 2021. Let's step back just before that event. You were at your home. Dr. Nagase, Daniel, was with you. He was on a Zoom call being interviewed by Western Standard. And can you tell us then, Dr. Bruchette, what happened?
Well, the backdrop was that I had a dispute with my tenant downstairs. We have a ground floor suite in our house, and we were having a dispute with him about his behavior, turning up music loud, et cetera, et cetera. And the next thing I knew was that there's a rap on the door, which should have been a giveaway. And I opened the door, and here was an RCMP officer who was one of eight who had descended upon me and my house. And without saying much of anything, he put the cuffs on me behind my back and marched me up my driveway and up the street that I live on. And it was both sides of the street were with parked RCMP vehicles. So there was...
So we thought it was initially a follow-up on the noise complaint from the night before, which lasted from 1 a.m. in the morning till 3:30 a.m. in the morning. So then when Dr. Bruchette, he opened the door, he thought the RCMP officers were there just for follow-up on the noise complaint from the night before. But the street was lined with cop cars.
How many cop cars and how many officers, and was there anyone else present there?
Four cars and eight officers.
Oh wow! Okay, all right. That's a little more than I thought. And was there anyone else present? We're having a little bit of.
Charles Hawk was in the background as well. So we had a house full of very unwelcome guests. No, the group was there.
Yeah, Charles Hawk is so unwelcome. Yeah.
Well, he is. And he was so just a thing.
We lost some signal.
We were hosting a meeting.
Okay.
Right? We were hosting a meeting. This is we were organizing as activists. This is not a manic person's activity. This is not an insane person's activity. Mel's leading a meeting of the head of the people of the salmon, and we've got Charles Hawk, you've got me in the house, right?
I mean, it couldn't have been better advertising. I mean, who else is going to have this parade that they're getting put in handcuffs in front of? And Floyd has actually said he doesn't need to be handcuffed.
Right, because Mel, how old are you?
81. Just ask Daniel. He loves to hear this.
Mel's been practicing medicine longer than I've been alive.
Well, yeah, wait, that's about 12 years. I'm I'm sorry. I couldn't resist. But okay, so Daniel, when did you notice that something was wrong?
So when I first got a phone call from the emergency doctor, so the police, they took Mel in handcuffs, they took him to the emergency room in Lionsgate Hospital, and then I get a phone call from Mel, and Mel asks me to talk to the emergency doctor, who is what, Dr. Watts or Dr. Wall or something?
Yeah, I think, is she Dr. Watts, I think it
was. Dr. Watts. So then, you know, she sounded not very interested in, at all about how the whole house was sleep deprived from the goings on of the basement tenant till 3:30 a.m. Mm-hmm. Didn't have any interest in that. And I said, well, you know, like Mel's perfectly fine. He was hosting a meeting and we were having a meeting at the house. I don't know what this whole concern about mental health is. And she just said, yeah. So I thought that was adequate explanation. From an emergency doctor standpoint, if a patient has friends, has family, and doesn't say that they're out to harm anyone, doesn't say that they're out to harm themselves, they're not hallucinating things.
Right.
That's what an emergency doctor wants to hear. It's like, okay, great. You know, I don't care if you're tired or you lost your temper or you're angry at someone or you forgot something last week. That's fine. I'm signing you out. You don't need to take up a bed in the emergency department anymore because you are within the normal spectrum of human behavior.
Right. So in other words, there didn't seem to be any medical justification to come to the house and basically take Dr. Brichet away in handcuffs with 8 RCMP officers. And I believe it was a mental health practitioner, a mental health agent was there as well. Is that correct?
An RN, a nurse.
Okay, registered nurse.
And the driver.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm just going to backtrack for a second because, Daniel, you were in an interview on Zoom, correct, with Western Standard.
And right so after the interview, I was like, where's Mel?
You got a phone call from the hospital, from this physician, this psychiatrist, presumably, or an emergency physician.
No, the emergency doctor.
Right,
doctor
right. As you said. Okay. You got that call like shortly after Dr. Brichet had disappeared. And that's when you questioned them. And it didn't seem justifiable to have removed him in that way. Okay. So what happened next?
So then I got a call from the hospital for a PET scan because they thought you had frontal lobe dementia.
Well, yeah, that was a working diagnosis fairly early on. Mm-hmm. But, you know, talk about livid. I was so angry. All of a sudden, I was in the back seat of this ghost car with my hands behind my back and cuffs. I've never been cuffed before. They're not very comfortable, in case you wondered.
No, and putting someone's hands behind their back, especially when they're 81 years old. I mean, you know, octogenarians are not known for their flexibility. Forgive me for saying that. I mean, that was very inconsiderate.
I represent that statement, but actually I'm quite physical. So
this is the thing. As an emergency doctor, if I think someone has a diagnosis of dementia, you know what my next question is? Are you able to find your way home? And if the answer is yes, I call your friend. I call your family members like, yeah, we don't have to worry about our patient having trouble finding his way home because he's not that demented.
That's
you can
right.
find your way home, then you get to go home.
That's and now, Mel, yeah. up until that point, Mel, you were driving regularly, right? You were completely self-sufficient and independent, right?
Yep. I've got an amazing garden on my flatters. I'm gardening and golfing and very active. And I retired 3 years ago, but my life has really not changed pace. In fact, in a lot of ways, it's busier than it's ever been.
And you had no
a five-star Japanese garden in his backyard.
Okay. So that certainly takes artistic talent and meticulous maintenance there. So I'm just going to repeat a couple things because our internet connection is very unstable here. So the next call you received was from Dr. Brichet. Is that correct, Daniel? And was it using his own cell phone or was it from a hospital line?
It was Mel's own cell phone.
Okay.
So they still allowed Mel to have his own phone at that point.
Okay. And Mel, you mentioned being quite incensed at that point. You were upset because they'd given you this diagnosis of frontal lobe dementia.
I've been in that emergency and, you know, I started in May of 70 at Lions Gate, which was the first lockdown hospital in Canada. And so that was my history as a GP. And so I was in there in and out, never as a patient. But
so you were now admitted against your will at the very same hospital that you started working at as a GP in 1970 and been in and out as a practitioner.
Right.
Wow. Okay. I don't even have a word for that. Honestly, shocking.
Well, that's my story. And yeah, I ended up there because it was a great hospital in the early 80s. It was voted by no greater source of complaints magazine is the best community hospital in Canada.
Well, and I'm sure that you had something to do with that, with your service there. Yeah.
Well, we hang out with a good bunch of guys, and it was a perfect mix, half GPs, half specialists, and it's a mere shadow of itself, I guarantee you.
Oh. But then once you were admitted to the psych ward, because they didn't release you after your CT scan.
Well, I spent a few hours in the Emerge, which was a joke. I was right across the street from the can, and I could get up and walk and go into the washroom and wander around. But I didn't have the cuffs on, but they had 2,000 people with me all the time.
Two security guards for an 81-year-old.
Wow.
Well, when they were trying to give me a shot, they had four paladin and an orderly that was a Ukrainian guy that was a brick.
Now, okay, what shot were they giving you?
Well,
they had to have four people there.
They offered different things, but they insisted that I take
they probably wanted to give you Haldol, and you told them no, justifiably.
I said, no way on the Haldol.
So that's an antipsychotic. That's strong.
And yeah, absolutely. And I've seen what that does to people, and I didn't want to be gaga for the next 12 hours.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So then we discussed, I take half a Zolpiclone, mm-hmm. At night if I can't get back to sleep. And so I said, why don't I just take half a Zolpiclone? And they actually ended up putting that on the orders. But at that time, there was, they did. The Emerge doc, when he wrote the orders, I think it was actually the psychiatrist said, what meds were you on? And I was only on two. Atacan for controlled blood pressure and an occasional, probably every second night I would take half a Loprox.
And that wasn't enough for the psychiatrist, just to give the regular medications. The psychiatrist insisted you get an injection of Loxin.
Yeah.
Okay, and so what?
So that's where they had the reinforcements with the four paladin, and are we going to hold you down? No, you're not going to hold me down. I was so livid, I couldn't see straight. And of course, I had to sit for half an hour in the waiting room with the handcuffs still on before they got me into a room. And while the triage nurse did her thing, and it was the usual gong show.
Dr. Bruchet, Mel, do you have a history of violence? Have you ever... Is there any record of you being violent to...
No.
How tall are you?
Oh, 5'10", 5'11".
Okay. All right. So you're a little about average height, and you're 81 years old. And did you have any intention to hurt anybody at that time?
No, I had a dispute with the downstairs neighbor.
Yes. But in the hospital yeah. There, did you have thoughts of it? No. Did you ever think of hurting yourself?
No.
And you weren't hearing voices?
Negative.
Yeah. Okay. So now I know that you got a day pass for December the 12th, because there is a video of you speaking at an event, and the event was a rally for you and some other individuals, other healthcare practitioners. And I listened to your speech, and you spoke very clearly for several minutes. And, you made your points, and it was very inspiring. And you have a tendency to give a lot of detail, and so
you did.
Yeah. But now, what happened in those days from December 8th to when you got a day pass on the 12th?
Well, it was just a series of progressive lockdowns, just more and more strident, more and more limitation of who I could talk to, when I could talk to them. And it ended up with basically because I objected vociferously and every other way that I could, and pushed their buttons basically, and they got more and more entrenched in going down that pathway.
The first thing they took away was Mel's cell phone. Then Mel got the day pass, got hours of footage that wasn't posted online yet about him being completely normal. And then after you had your day pass, the next day, Dr. Kang, the geriatric psychiatrist, I think, came to see you.
You know what? That was a week. First of all, she sent the resident in, and he interviewed me, and then she came in. That was at least a week. Dr. Lim, the psychiatrist that admitted me, he had said right at the beginning, you know, I have to defer. You have to see a gerontologist because of the possibility of dementia and frontal lobe specifically, and et cetera. But it took them a week. They basically were stalling to get to the whole judicial
review
panel.
Right.
But prior to that, they took away your phone access, completely no phone access for at least 4 or 5 days that I remember, that no one could reach you.
It was.
So is that standard procedure then, Dr. Nagase? Can you tell our viewers about, under what conditions would that happen normally?
You know, for I have limited experience in a psych ward, right? Because every now and then, I would send patients to the psych ward and then the psychiatrist wouldn't have time to assess them. So from the emergency department, I actually have to go back to the psych ward to the patient who's still admitted under the emergency department. And I ask them the same standard emergency psychiatry questions. Are you suicidal? Are you homicidal? If not, even if the psychiatrist doesn't see them, I will release the patient. I said, hey, sorry, no one's seen you for 48 hours. I've come here to release you. And then I will release psych patients if they're releasable. So the fact that anyone is being denied access to a phone that gives them comfort, that gives them, social interaction, right? Those are two things you absolutely would never deny to a psychiatric patient. You want them to have social interaction. You want them to have comfort from friends and family. So that's an incredibly aggressive maneuver to stop a patient from having access to communication.
Thank you for that. That's exactly what I wanted to know and our viewers want to know. So now, Mel, I also understand that you were given some medication. Can you talk to us about what happened and what medication that was? I've already spoken to Daniel about it, but I want to hear it from you.
Well, the differential diagnosis was half a page. It sort of covered basically every...
they called you a narcissist.
Narcissistic, bipolar, racist...
Misogynist.
I didn't know racist and misogynist were psychiatric diagnoses.
Well, no, but they were certainly a label. I would have my garden is actually Asian fusion. I have terracotta warriors. I love China. I love India. I love all of it. But of course, I was racist because the female psychiatrist, Dr. Kang, is East Indian. So because I spoke in terms that she didn't like, she said I was racist. And Dr. Lim is Korean, and I don't have any Korean touches in my garden. Yes, I do. but because he didn't like the way I addressed him and didn't pay deference. And so the diagnosis included mania, included hypomania, depression, different forms of frontal lobe syndromes or entities themselves. It was so ridiculous. Then they put me on med for schizophrenia.
Abilify.
Yeah.
It's not, according to the coastal health brochure on side effects, etc., it's not even indicated for mania, or mania isn't mentioned as a treatment.
Vancouver Coastal Health Authority sent out documents advising physicians not to use antipsychotics like Abilify for elderly patients. It's because for a decade, the medical literature, the meta-analyses, the studies, the heart and stroke literature all showed antipsychotics, and it doesn't matter if it's one of the fancy new second generation antipsychotics. Both the first and second generation antipsychotics cause strokes. That's why you're not supposed to use them on anyone over the age of 65.
And heart attacks.
Never mind 81.
My goodness. So Mel, how did you feel when they told you you had to go on this potentially, you know, adverse effect producing dangerous medication for a senior citizen?
Well, I was angry, to say the least, and insulted, and nobody was paying attention or giving me credit for 55 years total of practicing. You know, as you know, GPs do more psychotherapy than most other fields of medicine, just looking after patients from, you know, you're looking after people for three generations, four generations. You know the whole family tree, you know intimately a lot more than any referral to a psychiatrist would. And that's just the nature of the beast. And that's how I practice medicine. And I was certainly demeaned by these, as I called them, clowns at the time. They didn't like that.
Well, they said that in their own consult note. The psychiatry consult note said, Mel is manic because he's grandiose and he believes he knows medicine better than any other doctor. These same psychiatrists who are using medications that are contraindicated, medically contraindicated. If an emergency doctor did that, they'd be fired for ignoring the literature. If a cardiologist did that, they'd be fired because they don't know the literature. If a neurologist did that and didn't know that antipsychotics cause strokes, that neurologist would be fired. And yet the psychiatrist, three different psychiatrists, go on and on about how Mel is so arrogant because he brings information that they choose to ignore. Mel told the psychiatrist himself, these things cause strokes. They cause heart disease. They're contraindicated. And the psychiatrists take this view and they write it down in their own damned consult note. Oh, well, this patient is really grandiose and thinks he's better than us, and because he's telling us to.
Yeah. Have you heard this before, Sam?
I actually have, Mel. I actually have. You're not the first, actually. And I will say, I'm very sorry that you went through that. And it's unfortunate because you were advocating for yourself. And it's almost as if they took it as a personal affront and then used it as a diagnosis. A diagnosis, the condition qualification of grandiosity, which is one of the, you know, on the list for mania, right? We all know that, right? There's a list for depression, a list for mania. And so this is how you got this additional diagnosis in addition to the frontal lobe dementia. You got mania, and then they decided to treat you with this potentially dangerous, known to be dangerous, antipsychotic Abilify for someone of your age. And
As an aside, it really escalated when I started talking about suits and
lawsuits.
Okay. And that came when I came a crop of the esteemed, not really, individual by the name of Ira, who was the medical director of the Hope Center, the psychiatric ward. And I was personally, he was served with suits up to $1 million a day for every day that I was in there. And he reacted accordingly. That's when they took the phone to the public. There was two public phones on the fourth floor that people had access to. If they wanted a private conversation, they could book a time in an office for two other adjacent phones. So there was a total of at least four plus the one in the nursing station. So when I started screaming at this guy, he took away the two phones that were on the fourth floor that were for public use. So now I had all these psychiatric patients coming up screaming at me because they couldn't get access to the phone. Mm-hmm.
I'll just give you some background about the lawsuit. The lawsuit, it's coming from a First Nation law of the land. And in Vancouver Coastal Health, every single announcement, they say, you know, Vancouver Coastal Health, we recognize we're sitting on the unceded lands of, right?
And yeah, I saw the announcement, actually. Yeah.
We do have a group here on the West Coast that is laying claim to the first law of the land. And the first law of the land is the Aboriginal. And so their group have been working hard on behalf of Mel, saying, listen, you are violating Mel's rights as a person born on the land, right? The First Nations have adopted everyone who was born on the land as an Aboriginal, because you have the rights of the first law of the land. You don't have your rights given to you by a queen that came over to Canada, took a bunch of land for free, and started charging people money to buy land off the queen. Like, how ridiculous is that, right?
Understood.
Someone with a throne on the other side of the Atlantic finds a bunch of land, steals it, and then sells it back to you, right? So this is what the peoples of the Salmon First Nations group, they're working towards. And then they served in the British Columbia Supreme Court. They served the Lionsgate Hospital Hope Center with a fine for their violation of Mel's rights. And that's where the $1 million a day lawsuit came from. And that really aggravated Ira, the hospital administrator director.
Understood.
He was off for the whole Christmas. I was his worst nightmare. Because I have Cree heritage in me, so I am Indigenous.
And, right.
In that designation, the headman designated me as a whisperer of truth and light. So I have that designation now, which I wear proudly. And so here I am, a doctor who knows as much or more than they do, which was not well received, I guarantee you.
It sounds more punitive. That's exactly what it sounds like. It sounds like you were aggravating them in many ways, or at least they were interpreting your speech as aggravating. Your status as Aboriginal, the lawsuits. How many lawyers were involved, Daniel?
Just two.
Just two. Okay.
We're all nurses.
Okay. All right. So now you left on a day pass on December the 12th. You participated in the rally, and there's a video to that actually on BitChute. And I will link to that again. I did in the original interview we did as well, Daniel. And then you promised to return back to the hospital on your own recognizance. Now, Did they tell you what they would do if you didn't come back?
No, but it was very obvious. I knew exactly. And he, much as it said, you know, I came back exactly on time. Mm-hmm. And he complimented me. This is my main psychiatrist, Dr. Lim. He complimented me on the fact, and he implied that, you know, you did well, and that shouldn't prevent you from having more, but they were basically waiting to get to the review panel.
Okay, and when was this review panel held?
December 21st.
Mm-hmm. So you went another 9 days in custody.
Time they messed around, and I'd already done the mocap, and they weren't happy with some of the results. I mean, when I did that mocap, the first one, I had about 2 or 3 hours sleep in the preceding 24 to 36 hours. And I was so angry. I couldn't concentrate on blowing my nose.
And that's when you were first admitted. Is that correct, Mel? Because of the noise disturbance and everything, and you've been taken away in handcuffs.
That whole scene continued right the way through.
So for our viewers, I was just going to ask, for our viewers, can you describe what that test is? It's a test of cognitive ability, is it not?
Yes, it's cognitive and it's executive functioning and the usual.
It's like a psychological test where you have to draw a picture and do certain tests. But the thing is, I suspect they always made you do those tests right after injecting you with loxapine.
Well, it was certainly in that venue. Not all the time, but certainly at the beginning it was.
Wow. Okay, so 9 days.
Not even 100%. You're sedated with antipsychotics, and then they're making you do these tests.
Well, I remember speaking to you, Daniel, and you were very concerned about the conditions, and you were very concerned about the effects of the medication. Now, did conditions change in those 9 days leading up to the next review? Were you given back phone privileges? Were you able to? Were any other changes in how you were treated?
Well, the TIAs were the main concern.
Yeah.
So I had two episodes of transient ischemic attacks right at the time that I was talking to Daniel.
Yeah. This was 3 days after starting Abilify.
So you had two TIAs.
It was the morning of Sunday morning.
I wasn't aware of that. You had two transient ischemic attacks, and Abilify is known to cause strokes in seniors.
Exactly.
And they didn't stop the medication.
They basically poo-pooed it. They actually did. They did a couple days after, and I had a new psychiatrist in front of me in the same personage as Lim, the same guy. Did a 180-degree turn. He opened the talk by saying, "We've got to get a new approach here. I know you're really upset being on Abilify, and I'm going to stop it." Mm-hmm. Bingo. And I thought, oh, hallelujah.
Something now, scared them.
Yeah, well, or was it just a change in the staff, like a routine, a change in the staff? Well, like the
same psychiatrist, but he'd been off at Christmas and had a break, and the administrator was away for 10 days, and I never did see Dr. Kang, the gerontologist, again. Mm-hmm. She was on holidays. And I think there's a reason why they're taking holidays.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what happened at the second review? This would have been on the 21st, right?
Yeah, that's when they piled on the other diagnosis.
Oh, that's when they piled on, including the mania. Okay, now I understand. Okay. All right.
That was about a 5.5-hour kangaroo court. They'd already made up their mind. And, it was a doctor and somebody from the community and led by a lawyer. And I had legal representation, but she was more of a legal assistant. Mm-hmm. And I checked her out, and she seemed very good. And she had done these reviews before and been successful. So I was fairly confident. I ended up having probably 20 minutes, 25 minutes maximum in the 5.5 hours. The psychiatrist was so ill-prepared that we had to take breaks for lunch because he didn't have 9 pages of his clinical reports available. It was just ridiculous.
And how did they try to divert that hearing into a debate on your beliefs about this injection? Yeah, right? That's what they turned like a 5-hour. It's supposed to be a mental health review panel. And then they start turning it into a debate about what are Dr. Mel Grouchet's beliefs on the vaccine.
Well, and the ridiculous thing was that my representative said, don't go there. Just concentrate on your diagnosis of frontal lobe epilepsy or dementia and mania. And that's what I did, but I hardly got a chance to say anything. And they'd already basically voted. It has to be unanimous, as you know. The 4 points have to be, everybody has to agree, and they did. I couldn't take a breath when I got noticed. It was about an hour after the fact. So 4 p.m, I hadn't heard anything. I thought, this is not good, because I really had planned on going home. Mm-hmm. I thought surely they're going to, realize that this whole thing was basically a tenant-landlord dispute with a bit of a psychopath himself. And the staff were, anything but professional.
I'm really sorry to hear that. No, so in other words, it looked like they were trying to use your views on the injection as evidence that
absolutely
for the diagnoses of frontal lobe dementia, mania, and everything else. In other words, you couldn't possibly be mentally and emotionally sound if you believed the what you believed for the injections.
In the consult note, they called it a delusion. And the delusion was the justification for the labeling that Dr. Boucher had psychosis, right? Like, so I work emergency. I know what psychosis looks like. Psychosis doesn't crack jokes.
Yeah, no, you're an experienced emergency physician for sure. Not to mention the patient himself, when he was trying to advocate for himself, they were using it as against him, you know, and not listening to the reason. So this is interesting here, Daniel. We really should give a little bit of background and context. So wasn't it you, Dr. Boucher, who brought to attention the 13 stillbirths, the increase in the number of stillbirths among vaccinated mothers? And these were largely Aboriginal mothers. Is that correct?
No, don't know that. It was at Women's Center. So,
well, okay.
You know, that's the main referral for the province.
Okay.
So, you know, it would have certainly the Squamish Nation is just down at the bottom of the hospital road. So, yes.
Okay. So unspecified ethnicity and racial background. But you brought this to light. You brought this and you actually made some noise about this. Is that correct? That there was a profound increase in the number of stillbirths.
Well, it moved, you know, my main pitch throughout the whole thing was to honor the RCMP, honor the war vets that died protecting our rights, and the huge increase in cancers, and also the stopping the children's vaccines, because at that time, didn't know anything about the stillbirths. And then the stillbirths moved to the front, and I still think that is going to be the thing that's going to bring this whole thing down. If we can stop the vaccine, we can highlight the stillbirths. I mean, they're happening now. I mean, the first baby of the year has a high chance. If they've been double vaxxed, they're likely going to be stillborn. How do you hide that?
No.
So this is like, there's weekly, since November 11th, even before November 11th, Mel has been organizing weekly, you know, information gatherings outside. Outside Lionsgate Hospital, outside of the RCMP office. And these are awareness campaigns. And Mel has been organizing every single Sunday an awareness campaign. And of course, you know, at first it's about the adults, but then we're getting into stillbirths and then the children's vaccine. And every week, Mel is getting more and more awareness. More and more people show up to these weekly awareness campaigns in North Vancouver. And with the stillbirths thing, that just exploded. That across Canada, we were hearing about stillbirths, the 86th in Waterloo. And then, you know, John O'Looney was talking about stillbirths in the UK. So once that story exploded, I don't know what's going on, but it seems to me that there is a campaign to suppress.
Increasingly at those meetings, the numbers were getting, that last, the big one where I had the pass, there were well over 400 people at that. And I had been starting down at the Lonsdale Quay with 20 or 30 or 40 people coming in. Once we shifted it up in front of the RCMP and then over on Lonsdale where there was a lot more traffic, there was a number of people that came from Vancouver. And I didn't want to be a splinter group and interfere with Action for Canada and those groups because they were there long before I was. But they came because of the whole bit about the stillbirths. So the people, they were just so much more informed and they were more militant and they were, you know, people were honking horns in support, which we never had before. And I mean, it just time after time, people would come up and tell their story. We're sitting in front of Jimmy Pattison's newly revamped, well, a few years ago, revamped emergency. And that young guy came up and told his story, which was that he had an MI after his third shot. And
He was about 28.
28.
So MI, myocardial infarction, so heart attack.
Once the downtown Vancouver crowd started supporting Mel's rallies in North Vancouver. Like, they'd come across the bridge. I mean, the awareness in North Vancouver, which is a suburb of Vancouver, just exploded. It increased exponentially.
So Mel became quite well known for his opinion, his outspoken opinion, and for exposing or revealing these issues to the public at large. Okay, fair enough. Now, Daniel, you also filed criminal complaints at the RCMP on Remembrance Day, November 11th, against the College of Physicians and Surgeons of British Columbia Executive Board members, I believe, for potential financial conflicts of interest, correct?
That's right.
And it was you and Dr. Mel Boucher who were there, among others. And there is video documenting this. Okay. So we have that occurrence. We have Dr. Bruchet's very outspoken public expose of the stillbirths among injected mothers and his support for, of course, the veterans and the police and his opposition to mandates to inject children with the experimental.
So there's two things with the RCMP. First, they only have one officer assigned to the case where we have conflict of interest charged against very high members of the British Columbia government and the College of Physicians and Surgeons. The second thing with the RCMP is they only have one officer for our case, but they're somehow able to send eight officers to an octogenarian's house to take him away in handcuffs.
Oh yeah, he's a real danger.
And then the third thing is after Mel had his TIA, I had a chat with Mounties for Freedom, and one of their suggestions was, you know, as RCMP officers, RCMP officers can be requested to do wellness checks. So because I had a suspicion that Dr. Mel Boucher, was being abused and assaulted in the hospital, so giving a patient a medication that causes harm against that patient's will, that's assault. And that's what was being reported to me. So myself and about a dozen other of Mel's supporters, we all tried to make phone calls to the RCMP requesting the RCMP do a wellness check on Mel Boucher in the hospital. The RCMP refused. They said he's already being cared for by doctors. They refused to do a wellness check. So here's the thing. If a doctor or a nurse is the person committing the assault and the RCMP refused to go to the site where that assault is occurring and investigate it, who are the people supposed to turn to?
That's so true. That is so true. And I believe you were also concerned about Mel's neurological health being on the Abilify, correct? And I think you had expressed to me that you had called in when you found out he's on Abilify. You had spoken to Mel and you had mentioned that his speech pattern was concerning, that he was slurred. It could be because of the treatment, but it was slow. You wanted to know if he was okay. You had requested, I believe, a neurological consult. Did anything come of that at all?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he came to see me fairly promptly. It was a pretty cursory exam, and I already had an MRI, and I'd had a previous one for another issue 2 years earlier. There was no change in the MRI at all.
So they had a comparison, okay.
So they had a comparison, and the obvious was that the dementia was being increasingly a bit of a stretch as far as the diagnosis, particularly located in the frontal lobe. And I said right at the beginning, look, this is a clinical diagnosis. I don't care what the scan shows, whether it shows an improvement or decrease or whatever. It's still a clinical diagnosis. And by the way, what are you going to do to treat it?
But your opinion of the vaccines and the stillbirths, that, of course, was evidence that, that was part of the clinical diagnosis, right?
So. Exactly.
So the neurologist, although he came by, he didn't really go against the psychiatrist. He was not, he didn't stand up and say, hey, you know, the literature from neurology shows this causes strokes. Maybe you psychiatrists should get up to date. they all kind of refused to disagree with each other.
Well, they thought it was basically a phony call. And they actually said that Daniel was impersonating a psychiatrist, not a I mean, that's a low blow.
Oh, Daniel.
They are MDs, but and they readily admit it. I mean, he said it once, he said it 10 times. Lim said, you know, you have an extinguishing career as a GP, but to say that you know more than us about psychiatry is really a hard pill to swallow for the boy.
Yeah, they took that really badly. It's pretty obvious. And all you were saying was that you had decades of experience. And we know that a big part of family medicine is dealing with people's moods and their cognition, their behavior. You have the opportunity to serve and facilitate the health and wellness of families across generations, as you were mentioning. So in my experience, there's no substitute for experience, and it's very sad that they couldn't separate some of what you were saying, the actual information, with the individual speaking it. You know what I mean? It's unfair, because you can use that defense for anything, for anyone saying anything. You can just say whatever you want about them, and then this is actually you know, I'm very interested in this, because this is how propaganda can take root. You know, all you need to do is declare that someone is an extremist, and then anything that they say is wrong or bad right away, right? This is a real tactic that's being used.
Once you have the label.
Once you have the label, and cancel culture is like this, and, you know, Marxism is like this, right? Mass line formation. This is all well-documented and sadly repetitive throughout history. And unfortunately, it sounds like people are doing this, whether they know it or not. Now I'm going to ask you a couple more questions here. So what has transpired between that second review? You obviously experienced Christmas Eve and Christmas Day there. Is that correct? Or did you?
Yeah, I'm on pass.
You were on pass?
I was one of the few that didn't get, well, the final blow was New Year's Eve, but we ordered in pizza, which was well received. And so we probably have one of the key parties on the North Shore, because everybody's in lockdown over, you know, COVID. So there was hardly anybody. But at least the ones flew over the cuckoo nest, we had our own party. And most of them that were in there were a lot saner than the staff. So,
so it was a lonely Christmas, but New Year's Eve was okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody had a messed up Christmas.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. And so now, Daniel and Mel, do you feel that your involvement, Mel's involvement, his outspoken opinion, his expose of the stillbirths, his opinion about the mandates and the potential mandates for children being injected, do you think it had anything to do, and his obviously public persona and the fact that he was so well known, do you think this had anything to do with his being held against his will, that right from the beginning, from the RCMP showing up to your house in force, 8 officers, 4 cars, a mental health registered nurse, and then the diagnoses, how the panels went? Can you elaborate?
Go ahead. The extreme force from the RCMP, the abnormal behavior from the emergency doctor, right? There's no emergency doctor who wants to take up a bed if a patient can be released home, right? You want your bed is cleared. You want other people to come in, and you want to see other patients, right? If someone's good enough to go home, that's the first thing you do. I can't explain why an emergency doctor would behave like that and certify someone's frontal lobe dementia. I can't explain the psychiatrist. I can't explain the neurologist who refuses to, you know, tell the psychiatrist, do not give antipsychotics because it can cause stroke. So I have unexplainable behavior from the RCMP, from the emergency doctor, from the psychiatrist, all over an 81-year-old grandfather who's never assaulted anyone, never just tried to harm himself, and has never seen visions that I can't see.
And you know, what also strikes me is that, Mel, you mentioned having had an MRI 2 years ago for which they had a comparison with the recent MRI in order to check, you know, if there's any structural issues and neurological issues. So you had been in the system and you didn't have a prior diagnosis of frontal lobe dementia or mania or anything else. There was no concern about your mental or emotional health at that time.
Concern at that time was hypomania.
Okay. So hypomania. All right. So
the MRI wasn't done for that reason at all. I just had some visual change. I looked down, particularly with my glasses, and I was unsteady for a minute or two. And I thought, why not? Maybe it is something, and it was not at all.
Well, I mean, it's certainly the gold standard for imaging for most things.
Right.
Yeah. So, okay. Now, what has transpired since then that you want to talk about? So it is now January the 3rd and you went through New Year's, you had pizza and you've got street cred now in the ward because you got pizza for everybody. Right. So.
Well, spent time in the big house. Now you've got street cred.
You know, I think I do. Yeah. Believe me, it's not me. I'm a late bloomer to this whole process, and there's people that have been doing a yeoman job a lot longer than me and more famous lately, so et cetera, et cetera. But I think this has been a real great opportunity for a time for pausing, reflecting, and see where we can go with this from now. And I think everybody that I've talked to, including you, realizes that we need to have a break and just digest all this information and then really go for it and basically finish it off. I see this as a domino that is just teetering, and it just needs another little shove and they'll all go wham. And I think we can do it on that issue alone, the stillbirths and stopping the vaccinations. If we can do that and stop these, you know, toddlers from getting the vaccine, it's insanity. But, you know, they can justify it because that's our basic immunization program, 2 months, 4 months, 6 months.
You know, it's so interesting that you talk this way, Mel, because just in the last few days, we've seen, Dr. Anthony Fauci in a couple of tweets seemingly backtrack on statements that he has made over the last, well, let's say well over a year, okay? And in one of them was that he was saying that, you know, in these phase trials, you don't really know how the injections are going to be, how safe they're going to be until they're right out there. And he was essentially saying that, you know, something like, antibody-dependent enhancement can occur, because he talked about dengue, he talked about RSV, and we know very well what those, you know, illnesses, diseases imply when it comes to so-called vaccinations. They backfire badly, right? Right?
Absolutely.
So he talks about that. And the second thing he mentions, finally, something that got people banned off social media repeatedly, was that, the children in the hospital, well, you know, many of them, they were there with COVID, not because of COVID. And that simple admission alone, step back. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then, of course, Forbes announcing that he has the biggest retirement package in the history of the federal government, $350,000 a year US. Why would they even mention something like that? Honestly. And the fact that RFK's junior book came out recently. Sorry, I'm excited. With 2,200 citations detailing his involvement, you know, his questionable involvement, shall I say, diplomatically, from the HIV crisis, so-called crisis, all the way up until now, and a pattern that seems to have emerged, you know? Yeah. So is this all coincidence?
It certainly is not. And I think that's the whole point of this. I think that as this information promulgates worldwide, I mean, it's basically over. It's just, if you we sit in a meeting like this and then we go out on the street where there's no change, and yet there's this backswell, this pushback that is overwhelming the rest of the planet. And I mean, we are probably the worst on the planet, but based on our population, we are the most double mandated, locked down country in the world, worse than Eastern Europe, worse than Russia, worse than, and this can't keep going. It's going to go one of two ways. It's never going to stay the same. It's going to, we're going to fold, or we're going to close the deal.
I hope you're right, Mel.
We have to. If we can't sell this on stillbirths, and we can't sell it on abusing children by vaccinating, we got a big problem.
I mean, that's a good point. And for many people, that was kind of the last straw was the children, right? But then look at Australia, look at New Zealand. I mean, they just made lawful, euthanasia for COVID patients in the hospital in New Zealand. You know what I mean? Like you get this, and then the damn media, the mainstream media. Daniel knows how I feel about mainstream media. I feel that these mainstream, they should be held personally accountable for propagating this, telling people they're being propagating misinformation when they're the ones propagating misinformation. But I'm sure many of them don't realize they're doing it, but you can't use the excuse, I was only doing my job anymore, right? Like you can't use that. Nuremberg proved that, right?
Nuremberg tried that. It doesn't work.
So, Mel, when people just watch TV, like CNN or something, and I advise people, don't even watch TV. Don't even pay attention to that at all, because it can be very disheartening. And there's no hope there, right? And so, like, what message would you tell someone who only sees that and then sees this pushback? Like, we just got announced today further restrictions. I'm in Ontario. We just got announced today gym closures, just what happened in Quebec a couple weeks ago.
Already done it. But, this is just another nail in the coffin. They can't, this is deja vu all over again. And it's for the weakest variant that we've had. So people are not that stupid forever. There's going to be the hardcore that will never admit that they were on the wrong side of the fence. But the majority is going to swing. It has to.
I hope you're right, because the media is... But
when you think about it, where is this main stuff coming from? You mentioned Australia and New Zealand, but they've also had rallies of 500,000 people going the other direction, typical, man, obviously the bigger cities, but, we get 2,000 or 3,000 out on a Sunday for some rallies, which is pathetic.
Compared to Australia, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and even some European countries, like when you see what's going on in Italy, and even in Switzerland, there was a huge rally, but Austria, and Germany. I mean, it's just amazing that the number of people. But when people don't hear about it, Mel, when it doesn't appear in the media, that's very disheartening.
Absolutely it is. And I couldn't agree more with you on that aspect, because the media is the last bastion. That apart from Epic Times or, any of our Rumble or that, the typical social media is just so invested in it. And your comment about they're responsible, they are totally responsible, just as much as Goebbels was in Nazi time or Mao was in the other time. The Red Guard is the reason. This is the same scenario. And I mean, we know this extreme, but we also don't know what the major majority, the silent majority is doing. They're not all stupid, but they're in prison. They're tied by conflict with their own families, with their careers. It's not easy. It's easy enough for me to say, because I'm retired, they can't take my license or whatever. But for everybody else, like this guy and you, it's a different ball game. And it's not black and white. There's a lot of gray in there. And I think they are going to have to pay. But how far down the list do you go? You know the top, 10% should be eliminated.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
I already gave up my Alberta license.
Yeah.
I already gave up my Alberta license. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really sorry about that, Daniel. But you know, Mel, when you were talking about the people are waking up, and I think that's really the key, right? Because, you know, and then someone with your experience, you know, being 81 years old and talking about the Nazi regime and talking about Mao, I mean, this really puts things into context for younger people, because you kind of wonder what they're thinking. Oh, you know, this is okay. It's justifiable. The government knows what they're doing. Public health knows what they're doing. No, not if it's not about health and wellness. And that's what it seems like is happening. You know what I mean? It's so many red flags have come up that it's not about injections at all, right? It's so clear. And the top virologists and immunologists in the world have come forth and have offered the real data. And then you get someone claiming that they're science and that if you argue against him, you're arguing against science. I don't even need to. It's better, you know, and that by definition can't be science, because science is not a person. Science is not consensus. Okay. Science is not said because Stone Cold said so, which is what we're getting, right, from authority and government. It's like, it's almost like they have an idea and they're trying to justify it with science as they see it, which is scientism, right? It's not science. We know that. When a CNN doctor says, I've seen all 10 studies on ivermectin, and you know there's over 60 out there, over 30 randomized control trials, you know, showing, you know, it's very clear that it's a very effective prophylaxis and treatment for COVID-19. Like, you know that there's more to it. You know that there's an agenda beyond health and wellness, right? I mean, that health and wellness is not part of the agenda. Sorry, Daniel, go ahead.
Propaganda only works if you prevent rational thought.
I went through the process today.
But we've had a really long day today.
Yeah, sure, so sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah, you know, and I saw that, and I saw you had an adoring fan come by and show you some affection there, Mel. So I know you're in good hands. So is there anything else you wanted to say? Any last words, Mel or Daniel?
I think you really covered it very well. We really appreciate your time and your efforts and what you've been doing. And it's got to come from, you know, the grassroots, the boys in the trenches. And it's great to have the high-priced help, but
sir, the honor is all mine and all ours. I want to thank you so much for
I get your Ottawa butt out here to the coast and we'll feed you some salmon if there's any left.
I would love that Dr. Bruchet. Mel,
hopefully
so
I will
much.
Get back to Ottawa, so we'll definitely look you up.
You do that.
They live very close to the Ottawa Generals.
Oh yes. Yes, I've spent time there for sure. Absolutely. But Mel, Dr. Bruchet, and Daniel, Dr. Nagase, thank you so much for your time. Wish you well. Daniel, Mel, make sure to give us updates, and I'll try and get this published as soon as I can. And once again, thank you so much, and thank you for all that you do, and fight the good fight, and Godspeed to you both.
You bet. Feel free to edit up the storm if you want.
I do very little, if any, editing at all, and everyone knows it. So, you know, that's part of my deal. All right. So thank you, and happy new year to you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
You too.